Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, June 22nd, 2015. At least one South Sudanese analyst is confident Pagana Mum's return to Juba will speed up efforts to reunify the SPLM party and end the fighting.
I will not be surprised to see Pagan coming back as the SPLM Secretary General, and even some of the former trainees coming in the government of national unity that's going to be formed on the 9th of July.
And the Monude Ball basketball tournament is seen as a great success.
Monude Ball was a great man, and he's definitely done a lot for our people. So us as the youth coming together and doing something for Monude Ball to recognize his accomplishments is our small way of showing that this man is truly a great man.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Former SPLM Secretary General Pagan Amum returned to South Sudan's capital, Juba, this morning after 14 months in exile. Pagan was one of the SPLM former detainees arrested in December 2013 after President Kiir accused them of taking part in a coup attempt. As Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba, Pagan is expected to hold several meetings with Mr. Kiir and the SPLM Political Bureau during his stay in Juba.
Dressed in a black suit, white shirt and a blue and white tie, Pagan emerged from a Kenya Airways commercial flight at Juba International Airport today, looking as though he was headed straight to meetings with the president and SPLM leaders. Amum was accompanied by three other former top SPLM officials, as well as the Kenyan Defense Minister, Raisel Omamo. SPLM acting spokesman Akol Paul says Amum will be discussing aspects of the Arusha agreement with President Kiir.
The arrival of Comrade Pagan this morning is a continuation of the agreement that we have signed on the 21st of January this year, known as Arusha Reunification Agreement.
The other former detainees traveling with Amum were Deng Alor, former South Sudanese cabinet and foreign affairs minister, John-Luc Jock, former justice minister and former finance minister Kosti Manibe. South Sudan's Defense Minister Kwol Manyang and SPLM members involved in negotiating the Arusha intra-party SPLM deal were on hand to Amum and his team at the airport. Paul confirmed Amum and his companions have several meetings lined up today with the SPLM leaders.
And there will be a number of meetings in the SPLM leadership, starting with the SPLM Political Bureau, which is the highest organ of our movement, and be followed by the meeting of the SPLM National Liberation Council.
The arrival of the top former detainees team came shortly after another group led by Deng Alor visited Juba this past Saturday, June 20th, less than 3 weeks after first returning to Juba on June 1st. The Saturday session was a closed-door meeting with the SPLM Political Bureau, also attended by President Kiir. Today's arrival appears to be a culmination of efforts made by the SPLM and the former detainees in implementing the Arusha deal signed earlier this year in Tanzania. Former Justice Minister Jock says the goal is to reunify the party.
We are so grateful, and we hope that all the membership and the leaders who will be in the meeting will lay to rest this issue, and this we shall call a great day for the SPLM, and we shall be able to take further steps in fully and finally unifying the SPLM, even with the rest of the group that is in the opposition.
Jock says today's visit should improve efforts by the two SPLM factions to fully implement the Arusha agreement.
There are not many issues left, but there was the issue of the Secretary General of the SPLM. His reinstatement. We are hopeful that this also will be resolved.
The Arusha deal, a parallel peace process occurring alongside the IGAD-led peace initiative, was mediated by the Tanzanian ruling party, Chama cha Mapinduzi. It was signed by the three SPLM factions, the SPLM leaders, the former detainees, and the SPLM in opposition, led by former Vice President Riek Machar. So far, Machar has not demonstrated much interest in involving his faction in the implementation of the agreement. Mr. Kiir shacked Amum in 2013 after accusing him of abusing his power while in office. Amum later said he was fired for repeatedly calling for a National Liberation Council meeting of the party, which was required by the party. President Kiir also serves as chairman of the SPLM party. Paul says in one of today's meetings, which brought together Mr. Kiir, SPLM leaders Pagan Amum and his team, participants focused on adopting an agenda for a National Liberation Council that will implement the Arusha Agreement.
The Arusha Reunification Agreement has got three components. It has got political issues, it has got leadership issues, and it has got organizational issues.
I am Wake Simon Wudo for VOA News in Juba.
Amum's arrival in Juba should boost efforts to end the fight, the 18-month-long conflict in South Sudan, so says Jacob Dut Chol, who heads the Department of Political Science at the University of Juba. Chol believes President Kiir wants to implement the Arusha deal, but people on the streets are skeptical. They think Machar's conspicuous absence at those meetings shatters any hope for party reunification. Philip Thonaleu has more for VOA from Juba.
Chol says the Arusha agreement, brokered by the Tanzanians and the South African to reunite the three factions of SPLM, is being fully implemented. The deal, signed in January, calls on President Kiir to reinstate all SPLM officials dismissed from the party. Chol says Amum's return to Juba is significant.
I would not be surprised to see Pagan coming back as the SPLM Secretary General, and even some of the former trainees coming in the government of national unity that's going to be formed on the 9th of July. And therefore, there's a lot of lobby that the government has done. There's been a lot of interaction that the government has done. And I think also the former trainees also realize that instead of them being parties actually to the peace talk in Addis, so they decide actually to be now SPLM-M, or you can call it SPLM mediators, and therefore they've taken a mediating role.
Chol says more meetings with President Kiir, the third trip to Juba by members of the former detainees group this month, will give government negotiators a bit of breathing room.
There's a big role in international community. They have a big role in the region. They could be able to talk about the trusteeship. They could talk about sanctions. They could talk about the report of the AU Commission inquiry report. They could talk about this. So I think if the government bring them together, then you're going to have now the SPLMIO, the voice fighting in a great alpha night, and the government get now to gribble up with its own guns and its own soldiers to fight back the SPLMIO. And therefore, they want to actually Riek Machar, if he's not interested in the SPLM, unification agreement for Arusha. The world has led that, and it's going to be more easier.
Chol says Mr. Kiir can get an agreement with the former detainees. He can consolidate his camp and further isolate Machar. But Juba resident John Majuk is not so sure. He says the guns won't be silent if the rebel leaders are not satisfied by any agreement reached by the so-called group of 10 former detainees, or G10.
We hope that G10 should also come back with Dr. Riek Machar, because if Dr. Riek Machar cannot come back to the country, I think we have done nothing rather than just deceiving ourselves in the country that we have a peace.
Chol says the Arusha SPLM reunification agreement outlines the steps necessary to end the war and provides a chance to jumpstart real reforms in the government.
And I think those reforms now will be seen to be reforms that are gradual, the reforms that are going to now be supported by the citizen, reforms that are going to be supported now by everybody else. And therefore, that will be more or less like we come together, we stop the war, we stop the worry, we now work with somebody that wants peace again.
Chol says he believes the permanent detainees have not abandoned their demands to reform the security sector, management of public service, and individual freedom in the country. He says hardliners within the government who see the return of the permanent detainees as a threat should put aside their peers and work for peace. For VOA News, I'm Philip Tonaleu in Juba.
Officials say seven people at the UN camp for internally displaced persons in Juba were wounded when suspected SPLA soldiers fired shots into the camp on Saturday evening. The United Nations has confirmed there was a shooting, but a military official says he has no knowledge of such incident. Martin Kwetgak is the Secretary General for IDPs at the camp where the shooting occurred. He says eyewitnesses told him that assailants arrived in a vehicle parked near the entrance of the camp and opened fire.
They were shooting from the gate. You know, we have a market outside the gate. So it's very close to the gate of the IDP camp. So around there, five people were injured. Those five people, they were shot at the gate when they were running to the gate, we entered into the camp. And the bullet came in and injured two people inside.
United Nations Mission in South Sudan spokesman Joe Contreras confirmed that the shooting took place.
We can verify that there was a shooting incident, that five people sustained injuries and four of them are in a serious condition. Another two suffered minor injuries as they escaped the location of the shooting. And we have received reports from eyewitnesses that SPLA soldiers opened fire on the shooting victims, but we've been unable to verify that. We did send some of our peacekeepers to the location of the shooting on Saturday evening, 20th of June, but found no armed groups.
Quet says two women were among the wounded but did not specify the extent of their injuries. He says the two critically injured civilians are being treated at a medical facility inside the camp. Quet says the IDPs are certain that the attackers were government soldiers.
We can say they are government soldiers because we saw them in uniform and they came at the gates. There were no people wearing uniform here outside, only the government soldiers.
But SPLA spokesman Colonel Philip Aguer says he's not aware of any incident at the UN camp.
We did not get that information. You better go to the UN camp and confirm where there are wounded, where they were wounded. We don't have such a report.
Quet says the attackers drove away when Ethiopian peacekeepers intervened. Quet says UN police have raised the matter with the government officials. He says he has not had any report about the outcome of the discussions. Contreras say UN peacekeepers can only protect IDPs when they are inside the camp.
Let's be clear that this particular shooting incident that you mentioned last Saturday took place outside our protection of civilian sites. The peacekeeping mission is responsible for the safety and security of internally displaced persons on our premises. However, once you move outside UNMIS facilities, the security and safety of people, those are the responsibility of the government of South Sudan.
This is not the first time gunmen have been accused of attacking IDPs in a UN camp in Juba in March. Suspected SPLA soldiers shot at the UN camp, injuring scores of IDPs. That report was prepared by Charlton Doki in Juba. An Australian South Sudanese peace activist says the conflict in South Sudan has divided South Sudanese living in Australia along tribal lines. Nyok Gore, who heads an organization called the South Sudanese Peace Initiative in Australia, says relationships between some South Sudanese communities residing in various states of Australia has become tense since December 2013. Gore says his organization is reaching out with a message of peace among the diaspora as one way of creating a generation of peace-loving South Sudanese.
We continue to meet to share stories of how we are struggling with the loss of lives coming from South Sudan, the ongoing conflict, and that, you know, begin to draw in a lot of people within the community. This has been the way that we've worked on this initiative. There has been a lot of challenges.
What are some of these challenges that you're facing in this initiative?
You know, the level of trauma is so high, the trust level is so low among people of South Sudanese background. We are going against the tide of tribal, a strong attitude-minded community. And whether you are within South Sudan or outside, this is still the biggest issue. The current conflict has become a biggest issue to us, where even a number of members, they had to pull out because they thought that we were not strongly taking side. We were not trying to condemn either side of argument. And that's not what we come in. We come in as individuals that want to listen to one another and not to condemn and not to create more gap in a situation that is different views, in a situation that is different understanding. We need to understand why people are being pushed to this situation where they have to have a different opinion. This is the core fundamental issue that we need to listen to rather than judging one another rather than, you know, dismissing individuals based on the history, based on things that will not help us to move forward as individuals within the community, and to be able to participate in helping our nation that need a contribution of each of us, whether you are within the country or outside. It's all our responsibility.
Let's talk about people who are outside, people who are in the diaspora here. What is your initiative doing to address this political polarization that has gone along ethnic lines?
Well, it's a very huge and biggest deal to us, and it has brought, you know, a biggest challenge to us in a way that there is a big division that has happened within the community. People are questioning some of fundamental issues and beliefs that they felt have been undermined. With community in Australia, what we've been all doing is go out and listen to people and be able to offer support in building, you know, whatever literal relationship that is in place and sustain it with the hope that we need to move forward and there is only third alternative here, which is a non-violent approach to this situation. We need to listen to one another.
What would you tell the warring parties that have failed to sign a peace agreement for almost a year? Every time they sit down, the differences, instead of bringing them together, you know, pushes them back. So what would you suggest as a possible means for bringing peace to this country?
My, you know, simple message as an ordinary South Sudanese person that don't have power to be able to influence is that there is no way that any of you would win by having gun in your hand. It was my clear message to Dr. Riep as I was sitting with him and a couple of other colleagues. And it was a message that I've even shared with the head of government delegation, Nyalan Makwei, at the time, as well as the former detainees leaders.
That's Nyok Gor, coordinator of the NGO South Sudanese Peace Initiative in Australia. He spoke with me in Victoria, Australia last week. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a basketball tournament is held in South Sudan to promote peace and remember one of the country's greatest basketball stars. That story is coming up.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the best toy you played with as a child and why?
I used to play with the toy of a car. You know, the design is a toy of car. This is the most I used to play. And the reason was that I love to drive. I love to drive that car. When I was dreaming that when I grow up, I will be having my own car.
I used to play with organ, music organ. I like singing, I like music also.
The best toy that I played with while I was a child was a doll. I could find it more interesting since I had no friends. So I would play with it as friends and talk to it.
We collected that clay soil, we make our own toy car. And then I used to make a good toy car where we call them Jeep when we see the army vehicles.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Around the world, young men and women try to get accepted into universities based on their intelligence, work ethic, and test grades. But what about the youth of South Sudan? Many will never get that chance for a number of reasons, including the ongoing conflict, which has displaced millions of people. But one young man did just that, and not only did he graduate, but did so from one of the most prestigious universities in the world. Ayen Bior has more for VOA from Washington.
Meet Paul Lorem. He's a 24-year-old from South Sudan who grew up in Kenya's Kakuma refugee camp. Lorem's parents died in Sudan's 22-year civil war. He grew up without running water, electricity, or school supplies, and now is a recent graduate of Yale University in the United States with a degree in economics.
A lot of my friends have been making fun of me that you went to Yale and you're trying to go and become a farmer.
Yes, you heard him correctly. Lorem wants to take his economics degree from one of the world's top universities to become a farmer. He plans to return to East Africa to start a new venture called Chanuru Farms, which will focus on modernizing the farming techniques of three main crops grown in Kenya. All joking aside, Lorem knows he faces many challenges, including East Africa's antiquated farming methods, a lack of infrastructure, and political instability. But he's determined to see it through.
A Yale degree gives you a tremendous opportunity to network with people from all corners of the world, and it would give you an opportunity to see actually farming can be such a transformational thing.
Lorem says if he had his way, he would go back to South Sudan and help build the country. But that's difficult right now because of the ongoing conflict. Lorem says he hopes to one day expand Chanuru Farms into South Sudan to help local farmers and other young people use the resources the country already has.
Unfortunately, for our country, with the current war and all the issues that we've had, the youth in our country have never been able to sort of acquire the skills and the necessary educations or experience that would enable them to take hold of the reins of power in the near future.
Lorem says he's frustrated because South Sudan's farmers should be able to produce enough food to feed their communities. However, due to the conflict and the lack of modern farming method, it's not possible at this time.
The main motivation is that if I could start a business that would provide opportunity for more people, then hopefully I'm thinking it would give me a chance to hopefully employ them and give them a chance to actually do something meaningful, not necessarily waiting for a handout.
Lorem plans to focus his attention on Kenya for now. According to Lorem, there are millions of small-scale farmers in Kenya who engage in subsistence farming, using techniques that are mostly outdated. Philemon Rono is Lorem's business partner and co-founder of Chanuru Farms. He is from Kenya, and he says the old traditional way of farming has led to low productivity and forces communities to import massive quantities of fruits, vegetables, and meat.
If we are importing, why can't we try to cut that down by producing our local raw materials? That will help us to, you know, create employment, increase profitability for farmers who are doing the actual production. And at the same time, we'll be helping Kenya to improve its balance of trade.
Rono says they'll start the business by focusing on three crops.
Right now we are dealing with soybeans, sunflower, and canola. After our research, we found out that we import most of these crops, yet Kenya is perfectly fit to be able to meet the demand.
Lorem and Rono are both very optimistic about the future of Chanuru Farms. Lorem believes that if Chanuru Farms can turn a profit within a few years in Kenya, they can expand the business to South Sudan, where new businesses are desperately needed. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
Hundreds of people filled Juba Basketball Stadium over the weekend to watch the first ever Manute Ball Tournament, which marks the fifth anniversary of the South Sudanese basketball legend's death. Organizers and players say the tournament not only keeps Ball's legacy alive, but also offers an opportunity to spread messages of peace and develop South Sudan's basketball talent. Mungume Devs Rakarinj was there and has this report for VOA from Juba.
The theme of the Manute Ball Tournament is Sports Unite Us. The event features South Sudan's four leading teams, Malakia Basketball, the National Engineering Sports Club, Black Stars Basketball Club, and Imlatalata Basketball Club. Nicola Ball is Manute Ball's cousin. He played on Sudan's national basketball team between 1968 and 1988. He says he hopes this inaugural sporting event in memory of his famous NBA player will give South Sudanese a brief respite from 18 months of conflict.
We need our people to wipe their eyes from tears and to be happy for one day or two, for this whole week to be together. And we hope that this will make bridge among them, and we bridge the boundaries between the tribes and sectionalism and all things that divide us from each other.
Nicola Ball says there are important life lessons to take away from what happens on a basketball court.
If somebody aggresses you, you try to forgive him. And that is how it is. In basketball, if you get an elbow and you got an apology from your teammate or your colleague, you say, sorry, no problem. We go ahead.
27-year-old Abraham Salva Mathok plays for the Black Stars. His team defeated Nimunatalata by a score of 68-45 in the first game of the tournament. But Mathok says there is more to the tournament than winning or losing a game of basketball.
This tournament is truly a positive thing and it contributes to our nation's unity. So I'm actually proud to be a part of it. Then it can actually contribute to our unity. Yeah, Manute Bol was a great man and he's definitely done a lot for our people. So us as the youth coming together and doing something for Manute Bol to recognize his accomplishments, it's our small way of showing that this man is truly a great man.
Bol played in the NBA for 10 years, from 1985 to 1995. For the former Washington Bullets, now known as the Wizards, the Philadelphia 76ers, the Miami Heat, and the newly crowned NBA champions, the Golden State Warriors.
Nice one from Kellerman. Nice score from Kellerman.
Ayel Marwal Lake, who goes by the name Awilo, was chosen as the most valuable player for scoring 14 points for Nimunatalata. 25-year-old Lake says Manute Bol was the inspiration when he started playing basketball at age 12. Today he hopes to inspire other children to take up the sport and excel at it.
I wish every kid to enjoy basketball, to play, and we need South Sudan people in peace, people to come to the sport and play basketball, and we need to compete in every tournament in the world. For me, I wish, and I'll be working hard to be best player in the world.
Robert Ladu Benjamin is chairman of the South Sudan Basketball Association. He says that 5 years after Bol died, at the age of 47, the 7'7" basketball star continues to inspire many South Sudanese.
So it's a symbol that person, whether from the town or countryside, could make it if he's determined.
Manute Bol is remembered not only for his skills on the basketball court, but also for the charitable work he did for the people of South Sudan. To acknowledge his contribution, USAID and other partners helped construct a basketball court in the remote village of Turarei, where Bol was born. The tournament is scheduled to end on Thursday. Event organizers say they are already planning for future Manute Bol tournaments and will invite teams from neighboring countries and some of Bol's former NBA teammates to take part in them. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Banda by Dis Majos. We have been listening to Dis Majos with that song, Banda. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for joining us. And join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Amma,